Hey, how you doing?
How's it going?
Yeah, you look nice. You look nice today. I missed you, spoil the show listener.
This is Marcus doing his best feminist Gosling. Continue.
Oh, if we're doing feminist Gosling, I have to change the subject matter a little bit.
Hey, girl, do you want to subvert the paradigm with me? Do you want to work against the phallocracy?
Hey, girl. Once I'm done toppling this patriarchy, I can't wait to come home and hold you.
And cook you dinner.
Hey, what's up, Spoiler Show listeners?
Because we don't care for typical gender roles in this house.
Shut up! Welcome. Welcome to another fantastic episode of the Spoiler Show. I'm Marcus Cunningham.
And I'm Matt Bose.
And joining us for this extra special Christmas edition is the Batman of Santa Claus facts, Tori Dance.
See? So I'm still the Batman of Santa Claus facts, but the Azrael of Morrissey facts.
Yes.
Okay.
Or possibly the Santa Claus of Batman facts.
Yeah.
We could go Superman.
You're like the King or Queen of England. You just accumulate titles like Empress of India.
That's good.
That's one. You just got that one.
Empress of India.
I don't know if you got the message on that one, but yeah, you're that now.
Can I be the Archduchy of something?
Archduke.
Add that to your list of styles.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I wish I had styles.
Archduke of Christmas.
The Archduke of Christmas.
Yeah.
The Batman of Morrissey facts.
Because Batman was a rank technically in the army.
You could be a Batman?
You could be a Batman. Yeah, no, you can.
What do you have to do?
I know it's technically a rank on a cricket team.
No, a Batman is a gentleman's butler. So... Have you watched Downton Abbey yet? That whole sentence
sounded so gay.
Have you watched Downton Abbey yet?
No, but I watched the Jimmy Fallon, what was it called? I think it was called Sexton Abbey, or no, Downton 6B, that's what it was.
Downton 6B?
Because they're in Studio 6B.
Okay, so, was there a guy with a cane?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the guy with the cane, he's on regular Downton.
Yeah.
And the reason why he's on the show is because he was the Batman for Lord Grantham during the Boer War.
Batman.
Yeah, pretty much. So that's where they met. And, you know, Batman.
Batman.
You could literally be a Batman. I don't think they have Batmans anymore.
Batman.
Being a Batman does not sound as glamorous as it really should.
No, it doesn't. Like, no. It's like cleaning people's jackets and, like, fitting them properly. That's what a real Batman is.
Is that where the phrase "batty boy" comes from?
It might be, yeah.
What's the etymology of "batty boy"?
I don't know.
I feel like being a Batman is basically like being the bottom in a homosexual relationship.
It could be, especially with British the school system, like the public schools. Like there was a lot of buggery, and there continues to be buggery.
What is that based on? That assertion?
Huh? Wait, could you have said that with more monotone in your voice? That was like Werner. There was a lot of buggery.
I'm trying to give buggery the consideration it is due.
When
I said that, Christmas decorations fell off my wall.
It's true. It's like a Charlie Brown Christmas.
It's hanging like a dejected Christmas phallus. Anyway.
All right. Why are we here?
Christmas time.
Why are we here? We're here because things are decorated. And when things
are
decorated...
For the time being, while things
are temporarily decorated,
yeah.
You know that it's one of two times of year. And we've already had Halloween, so I guess it's Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are.
I think that was like an 80s Christmas song. I guess it's Christmas.
No, I think...
They just got all the sort of like shoegaze, like, you know, new wave types to record a Christmas song called I Guess It's Christmas.
Joy Divisions, I guess it's Christmas.
Yeah, Joy Divisions, I Guess It's
there's
Christmas.
There's a Sonic Youth song called Halloween's Over, I Guess It's Christmas.
It's Christmas now, if you're into that.
Halloween's over, I guess it's Christmas.
Yeah, you heard it. It's good.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful song. And today we're going to regale you with tales from the stocking keeper.
We're like, you know, Christmas past, Christmas future, Christmas present. It's, you know,
like, which one of us is which?
Muppets Christmas Carol. You guys know the story.
I've seen Muppets Christmas Carol.
I am only familiar with classic works of literature as interpreted through the Muppets.
Was Wishbone too?
Ah, there you go. Yeah. So I've got like Treasure Island really nailed down.
Yeah,
Christmas Carol.
Yeah,
it's every time I think of the Iliad, I think of Wishbone.
Yeah,
what's Wishbone?
You've lost.
No Wishbone.
I guess not.
Okay,
you don't know Christmas.
Wishbone was a show that was popular then when we both were human children and had access to television.
I was a human child as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Tori. Tori's a little younger, but
a little bit.
What?
Wishbone was a story where this, you know, cute as a button dog who was a Jack Russell Terrier would reenact scenes from various works of classic literature.
First of all, that sounds like a crock of shitty shit.
No, it's a fantastic show, Marcus.
No, it sounds like a crock of shitty shit. Uh-huh. And second of all, the only dog that I'm familiar with from my childhood is the Littlest Hobo, and it's going to stay that way.
He is a pretty great dog.
He's the MacGyver of dogs.
I'll give you that.
Thank you.
While we're just throwing titles around, the Littlest Hobo is now the MacGyver of dogs. So, Littlest Hobo, wherever you are, roaming the rails.
Here he is, the MacGyver of dogs.
Yeah.
There's the Littlest Hobo.
We know that there is a voice that keeps on calling you, and the road is the where you'll always be. So, yeah, if you can hear this Littlest Hobo.
And in front of you prances the medieval herald, trumpeting your styles ahead of you.
Yeah.
Here comes
Littlest Hobo, MacGyver of Christmas.
Here comes the MacGyver of dogs.
Oh, yeah.
Make way, the MacGyver of dogs.
Yeah. Although I think he predates MacGyver.
Yeah.
Unless it's the Canadian TV factor that makes it look like it's from 1982.
See, that's what
when
I
it
always...
was in fact potentially from later on.
I mean, in my life, they were contemporaries, but there's definitely... Now that I think about it, about 10 years.
So does that make MacGyver the Littlest Hobo of humans then?
How boring is that? Yeah.
I think
you're the man who's as good as a very smart dog. Yeah. It's MacGyver.
Yeah.
Oh, MacGyver shat himself. And he also managed to get into the dog-proof bins. He's much too smart to be a real dog.
All it took him was a pile of leaves. And
wait. He used his teeth like a real innovator.
Yeah. That's the invention he uses all the time. Shit. He just keeps doing that. Maybe he's not really MacGyver.
The interpreted meaning from that universe... When someone MacGyvers something is when they devolve and start scrabbling through solid objects with their nails and teeth.
Oh, dog.
Shitting,
he got out again.
Shitting themselves and eating it. Oh, he MacGyvered it.
Yeah.
He keeps MacGyvering in the bedroom whenever he passes out after my parties.
Oh, man. I'm sorry, MacGyver. That went to a dark place. I think I've said it before, but like the opening titles of MacGyver are one of my earliest memories.
I that's interesting because I don't remember them in the slightest.
It's like an explosion, and
I mean,
the word MacGyver flies out.
I've seen MacGruber.
I was gonna say.
I remember that.
Oh, it's much better than MacGruber. I fucking hate MacGruber.
It's written over my memory.
Like, did you watch that movie?
Yeah,
it was fucking garbage.
The trailer. It's pretty good.
It was absolutely terrible, and I snuck a Mickey into the theater. So I was actually pretty loaded when I watched it. Still couldn't even, like...
Shouldn't it have been obvious that it would be terrible since it's...
It was free.
A really... Yeah, but... No. Not because it was free.
That's the reason I went. I wouldn't have gone.
Well before you got the tickets or went into the theater, I feel like you could have known based on the fact that it's a very poorly disguised take on MacGyver's actual name and likeness.
Yeah, I understood this going in. Yeah, that's true.
Like, there's not... It's not possible to make a good movie that's that obvious of a take on one specific TV show.
That's why we brought Mickey's in. And even then, like, just unconscionably bad.
Even with the Mickey.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, have you seen the sketch on the SNL? In 30-second chunks...
Yeah.
It's great.
Like,
that's about it.
Like, I thought that movie was like 3 hours long. So it was just
it felt that long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
New from Peter Jackson. You've seen him on SNL. Now see him on the big screen
again
for 3 hours and 5 hours in the special edition DVDs.
Yeah.
It's MacGruber.
Part one.
Let's talk about The Hobbit.
Oh, fuck that.
Did you go see it?
No.
Did you go see it?
No.
It's okay, way too long.
Hold on. Let's not talk about The Hobbit.
Yeah. Why?
Check first. You brought it up.
I mean, you brought it up.
No, I haven't seen it.
Okay. Well, it's the shortest book.
Yeah.
And they have made it into a 3-part movie, each segment almost as long as each of the Lord of the Rings parts.
I'm imagining that they're doing the walking in real time or something.
Probably. I mean, like, how long is it to walk to the Misty Mountain? It's not that far away.
It certainly seemed that far away when I read that book.
According, as far as I knew, it was just a hop, so.
Yeah.
Misty Mountain hop. Yes, thank you. You got it?
Yeah, I get it.
You were there?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I'll file that one.
Yeah, it's a song. I lost that.
It's a song.
By whom?
By Led Zeppelin.
No, Brock Sampson, I failed you. I'm sorry.
It may have even been on Human Graffiti. I don't know.
Anyway, it's too long.
Christmas time.
Christmas.
Yeah. Speaking of another Venture Brothers reference, have you guys heard the Venture Christmas album?
No.
If you go on Jackson Public's blog...
Is it, Shallow Gravy? That was the band, right?
No. What? It's, what are you talking about?
The band that was on Venture Brothers that,
Hank and,
Wasn't it Shallow Gravy? That's the name of the band?
Oh, that might be the name of the band. Yeah. I've forgotten.
It's not them, though.
I misunderstood what you were saying. Yes, mm-hmm. It's characters from Venture Brothers, and
doing Christmas songs?
Yeah. My favorite, of course, is 21 and 24 singing Wonderful Christmas Time.
I'm just like it because you do a passable accent.
I do it. I actually can do both 21 and 24.
Yeah. I don't remember which one is which number.
24 is the dead one who looks like Jerry Seinfeld.
Mm.
It sounds like this.
See? There we go.
That's more than passable.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And then
the other one?
And 21 is the Kevin Smith with the chin strap looking one. And he sounds like this. Kind of.
That's better.
Yeah, yeah. My 24 is...
But he's got the Wolverine claws.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now he's brooding.
Yeah, badass. Because his friend is dead. Now he's got his skull. And he talks to him. Yeah.
Like Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah. What?
Jeffrey Dahmer had skulls. I spent an inordinate amount of time at work today looking at Wikipedia entries for serial killers because
you were practicing for the Christmas episode.
I wanted to research Christmas, and so naturally I started with Jeffrey Dahmer's Wikipedia page. It actually put me into a terrible mood. Don't do that. I would not sell any of you on reading the Wikipedia pages of serial killers.
Also, the Christmas special featuring all of them is just really bad. It's in poor taste.
Wikipedia gets dark really quickly. Like you start researching something innocuous and linked. To link, and then you're looking at Jeffrey Dahmer. So,
That one started off with serial killers. We were having a discussion about serial killers, and I was told about some like Canadian connected serial killer who escaped here. Something Ng, Christopher Ng, I think maybe, or I can't remember the guy's name. He wasn't really that important to me in my life. Anyways, I ended up reading on this list of like the most evil killers of all time.
Who's compiling this list? How does one quantify evil?
I think it was a Discovery Channel show. That was my thought exactly though. But you basically
need like a theology professor maybe to quantify evil? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a priest, a theology professor, and wait, this sounds like the introduction of a joke.
Or The Exorcist.
There's a pretty good show on Netflix called, I think it's like Great Crimes and Trials or something. And it's just little fun, bite-sized episodes of the most horrifying serial killers and murderers and trials. And it's fascinating. You just burn through it. It's 20 to 30 minute episodes.
That shit just makes me so mad, though. Because when you look at the Wikipedia entries for these guys, you realize the proportion of them that haven't been killed. Like Jeffrey Dahmer... Jeffrey Dahmer's death was actually awesome. For those of you who don't know, Jeffrey Dahmer committed his first murder, at least according to Wikipedia, by bludgeoning a dude to death using a barbell or a dumbbell.
This is the best Christmas
episode. Merry Christmas!
So he bludgeons this dude to death with a dumbbell. And fast forward, 20 or 30 years later, whatever, he's in jail. He's committed all these horrific, nightmarish murders.
Yeah.
Complete with, torture and
eating
sexual misconduct and cannibalism. He finds himself at the wrong side, on the wrong end of a life sentence of obviously like hundreds of years, consecutive life sentences. And he's living out the rest of his days in this maximum security prison. And it just so happens that one day he's put on like cleaning out the workout room duty. And this other prisoner who was with him beat him. He stove his head in.
Nice.
With bar that he had taken.
I don't know if I'm saying nice for killing him, but good use of the word stoving one's head in.
Yeah.
I think that's what I'm really impressed by.
Jeffrey Dahmer's head was stove in by another inmate using, guess what, a barbell.
It's poetic.
Yeah. It's poetic.
It's nice.
And it got me thinking, every serial killer
needs to get ironically murdered?
They need to be killed ironically. Yeah. I feel like ironic murder is the only thing that satisfies me. Especially because afterwards...
Wait, we need to put that like a quote. Ironic murder is the only thing that satisfies
me. That's going on
me.
A t-shirt.
As far as punishments for like really horrendous murderers. Because you get stuff like Jeffrey Dahmer getting his head blasted in with a barbell.
Yeah.
And then you get to have a whole bunch of these really wonderful, ironic moments where the mothers of these serial killers exclaim in exasperation to the media, much like Jeffrey Dahmer's mother did, are you happy now? To which everyone says, yeah.
Yeah,
that's true.
Okay,
actually, yeah.
I guess that is one of the few unequivocal cases in everyone just sort of agreeing on something. Yeah. He deserved to get good, really.
Thanks for asking that question.
Yeah.
The world would like to let you know, Mrs. Dahmer, that, yeah.
Yeah.
We are happy now.
Things are better now.
Things are better.
Has been ironically murdered.
Yeah. And so, there's all these, like, fucked up, horrible people who torture their victims and stuff, and I feel like in that case,
episode is so good. Torture. Do you want to make a list of ironic murders that should happen? Have you been thinking about it?
No, I haven't been giving it thought. I just want to mention one more thing about serial killers. Not serial killers.
Children, we will get to
this guy's just a really horrible cannibal, and this is an example of one thing about
Japan. How
does
one become a more horrible cannibal than normal?
One gets away with it and writes books about it and has a manga made. Horrifying.
That makes sense.
Pretty horrible.
That is pretty bad. So he got away with it.
Yeah.
This cannibal.
Yeah. So this guy's name is Issei Sagawa. And he was studying in France and, long story short, killed this poor Dutch girl and partially cannibalized her before trying to dump her body near a lake and getting caught in the act. So thankfully he didn't have a chance to commit any more cannibalistic murders. When he went, they had him in the legal system in France. But those ever so direct in their democracy French people protested against the fact that they were paying to hold a Japanese expatriate in jail.
So they
deported him to Japan.
Yeah.
And in Japan, they decided that it was not a big deal. And he was never charged with anything in Japan because of some, like, there was like some paperwork stuff and they downgraded his mental illness. And then they're like, fuck it. Whatever. It's just a honky.
This is pretty bad.
Pretty bad.
And so afterwards, I know about this because I was watching a Vice documentary. They did an interview with him.
Did no work at all today, did you?
I only got through about 5 or 10 minutes of this interview, which is 30 minutes long, because this guy just nauseated me so much. And throughout the interview, they were showing clips as this guy's telling the story of this this murder and cannibalism that he did. They're showing little like snippets of the manga made about him murdering and eating this girl, and I was like,
that's pretty gross. That's glorification.
There's no way that this guy shouldn't be
ironically killed.
Maybe just thrown into like a pit of pigs or something.
So you prescribe to the Final Destination theory of, you know, how people should
the elaborate
you
die how you Goldberg. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. You die how you live. For yeah. sure. If you're a cheerleader, it's definitely going to be a cheerleading accident.
Yeah. Yeah. So like in Thanksgiving.
So it's universally recognized by everyone, and this guy has talked about doing it.
And, he's very proud of it. Yeah. He's very proud of it. He's just like walking around free in Japan. And of course, thankfully, he can't get a job or anything.
I should hope not.
But he's a celebrity.
But he's a minor celebrity in Japan.
That's fucked up.
He's known as Sagawa-kun. So like they
that lovable little psychopath that, yeah,
that cute little guy,
huh.
The littlest hobo I wonder, of like, Japanese cannibals.
Would North American culture be any different?
You know what? There
nowadays
to an extent, I actually almost agree with you. Not that he would get away with it necessarily, but if some. Like
if there was a statute like of limitations,
psychotic, if there was yeah. some like scary psychotic murderer like that who somehow got away with it and then couldn't be tried again for something he's already
double
been,
indemnity or something,
double jeopardy,
double indemnity is the movie.
Yeah. Anyways,
double jeopardy. If that
happened in North America, given the number of like weird psychos and freaks and stuff that are really into
Tumblr.txt.
Yeah, all these
section of humanity.
All these creeps that are really into serial killers. I wouldn't be surprised if there was some little cult.
A
cult of personality around Charles Manson for a while.
Well,
it still is. Yeah.
Serial killers regularly get fan mail and marriage proposals and various conjugal opportunities. It's
also interestingly enough, in reading the Wikipedia entries for a number of serial killers, corresponding with a serial killer is like a really great way of ending up a victim of the serial killer. Like if you happen to be friends with them and you like, you know, kind of know them from, you know, when they were being a super creepy person, chances are you're going to get killed. So
it's good looking out, Marcus.
Statistically, the people that you know are serial killers probably will kill you if you give them a chance.
Yeah. Merry Christmas.
Yeah. And and Ma in her kerchief and I in my cap.
Yeah. You're the one who wanted to do this episode. You just talk about serial killers for half an hour.
Do you remember last year where girl with
half an hour?
Shit.
Yeah.
Fuck.
You remember last year where girl with the dragon tattoo was the feel bad Christmas movie of the year?
We got the feel bad Christmas podcast up high. Woo!
Yeah.
Woo!
Yeah, serial killers.
Yeah.
Oh god.
Yeah. I call it Santa's sleigh.
Oh.
I was also thinking a very special spoiler show Christmas, which is still my favorite.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Christmas. Yeah.
Christmas
stuff. Do you guys have any really great or perhaps really terrible Christmas memories that you would like to share?
I think Matt has one or several.
Matt claims to not have any Christmas memories, which either means that he has very few memories from before the last 2 months.
True.
In his life whatsoever, or it means that he was misinterpreting me as saying, or as having asked him if he had any good Christmas memories. I just don't really
have any at all.
What was working retail like during the
horrible
Christmas season? Tell us
about
it. If
you want a reason to hate Christmas, seeing people at their absolute bestial worst, maybe not cannibalism worst.
Yeah, Black Friday.
Black Friday, too. Well, bigger in the States.
Yeah. Not in Canada.
The Christmas Boxing Day. Boxing Day for sure.
Boxing Day in Canada.
But like watching people just desperately trying to buy and accumulate, you know, items to try and, you know, give to their family to prove that they like them. Like it's just so horrific. I hate it.
Wait, are you complaining about the gift giving or the consumerism? because I should mention that we are a podcast with a segment called Sell Me.
The consumerism, but so blatant, like, I'm all for
people... We are a podcast with a segment called Sell Me on it.
I am all for people trying to engage with media that they like and trying to, you know, sort of be an evangelist for it. When you're just buying things because...
Someone on a podcast told you to?
No, because when you think that because this will make that person members. Like you. Yeah, essentially. When
that's such a... That's the worst... That's the worst way you could possibly think about it. You think...
Having done it for four years, yes.
Do you honestly buy people gifts... So, because you think it'll make them like you?
That's, when it comes down to it, that's the Christmas.
Or do
no, it's not.
Yeah, it is. You've deconstructed it into the most hollow version of itself.
Well, I was there on the ground floor watching it happen. Like,
yeah, but have you ever been inside one of those people? Have you ever actually given a gift? Or is that just a like a task that you jump through the hoops of every
year? Like, looking at it like en masse. That's what it looked like. I try to give gifts that I think people will like. I don't feel that it is a value judgment on myself to say, like, I gave you this thing and now you're going to like me. You know, like, I try to get away from that. But watching people do it for day in, day out, it does kind of, like, sort of deaden you to the experience.
Yeah, but you gotta bring it back in the end to the fact that these people are out buying something for someone else. They're spending money that they wouldn't normally spend on someone that they care about, trying to give them something that they'll enjoy, trying to give them something that will make their life better or entertain them.
See, I'd rather not have a holiday devoted to that. Like, you should just be doing that all the time.
I absolutely agree. This is my argument with every girl I've ever dated when it comes to Valentine's Day.
I'm sure that has worked out pretty well for you in the past.
It's been hit and miss.
Yeah. Like the fact that, sure, a holiday devoted to how much you like everyone around you and how much you love them and want to give them things, that's a lovely ideal. The fact that it has become a season that starts in November and goes on until, you know, the actual date, that has just been commodified so much.
Somehow it's easier in the States, it must be, because they don't have Thanksgiving until November. Mm. So their Christmas season isn't 2 months long, it's just a month. For us, that's true. Like, for them, they do Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas. For us, it's Thanksgiving, Halloween, Christmas.
Yeah.
And so we have, I don't know, literally, like, 2 months getting the taste of Halloween out of our mouth and moving on to...
I would be interested to hear from an actual American on that, because it seems to me that the commercial potential...
I was hoping you were going to say an actual Christmas scholar or something.
Yeah, let's get a Christmas doctor. But, like, I feel that the crass commercialism that drives the entirety of the country would probably tend towards that. Like, I think they're going to push Thanksgiving out, because you can't... There's only so much you could sell at Thanksgiving.
Yeah. I mean, they also have Black Friday, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Black Friday is...
They've co-opted Thanksgiving using Black Friday.
Yeah.
And so perhaps that's what makes up for their lack of Christmas sales.
They've coalesced it into one sort of...
Yeah, they just have... Whole. They have two globular periods of sales.
Rather than one sort of
Black Friday
period.
And then 2 months of nightmarish retail.
Yeah. So that's where I'm coming from.
So you're the Grinch.
I am the Grinch.
The Grinch who had Christmas ruined.
I'm the Grinch that sold Christmas.
The Grinch who sold Christmas and hated every minute of it, obviously.
Yeah, I'm getting better.
Yeah.
I feel like I've been growing lately. I don't have to sell Christmas gifts to people. I don't have to deal with people.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. No longer the working in retail. Store.
Yeah, that is helpful. And I want to spend time with people I like as opposed to working every minute of the day, watching people frantically buy items.
Do you think that it's just because it's coalesced to the point working in retail that's all you ever see hour after hour after
pretty
hour
much, yeah.
is buying things?
Because it's almost like, you know, being a cop or a paramedic where, you know...
don't fly with yourself.
No, get me out on this. Okay, so as a cop or a paramedic, you're seeing people at their absolute worst.
Yeah.
Especially a cop. Like, paramedic, you're seeing people terrified, in pain. The cop, you're seeing people full of hatred and violence. And that's the only experience you're going to have with that particular person. My experience with particular people has been rampantly trying to buy anything. Like, I need that thing. Where's that thing? Give me that thing. And that's how I've met you know, hundreds of people. And that's all I know about them.
Okay. I wanted to just, like, plane you in the anathemic usage of the word.
Yeah.
I'm reading that book right now. It's fucking great.
Very nice.
I actually see it that way. I understand what you're saying.
Sure, I'm not seeing them murdering somebody. I'm not seeing them getting
hit by a car. You're not trying to compare retail to the nobility
of those professions. It's just seeing a great mass of people focused on one emotion.
You're comparing that experience of having every single person you interact with be some type of asshole.
An asshole in service of a base desire, as opposed to someone who is crying out in fear and pain for a paramedic, or for a cop where someone is drunk and full of hatred. Like, that's your only experience with this person you'll ever have.
Sometimes people are drunk and just full of music.
I'm not disputing the fact that people are drunk and full of music on occasion.
Like,
But do they often call the cops for this reason?
Well, sometimes they end up in police cars and they become viral video celebrities.
Absolutely.
True.
And that's a particularly Albertan thing to do, actually.
But yeah, my views on Christmas are a little bit skewed, as you may not have noticed.
Fair enough. I love Christmas.
Okay, what is it about it you like?
What do you mean? You got like
just sell me on Christmas. Come on, please.
Okay, great.
Deal.
Great. Yeah. Deal. My sell me on it today is Christmas. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
I've heard that.
Okay. That slogan has been co-opted by Staples. Start. Staples has chosen that as their slogan for back to school time.
Okay. Thank you, El Grincho. Seriously, though, especially in Canada, we have white Christmases every year. Mm-hmm. There's snow everywhere. And you have an excuse to sit inside with your loved ones drinking warm alcoholic beverages.
Why can't you do that every day of the year?
Because it's not always winter.
But just drinking with your friends and your loved ones, that should be something you are celebrating all the time.
No, Matt, because then you become like the Irish, and what you have is a society devoted to alcoholism. One time a year is good enough for non-alcoholic people.
Okay.
So anyways,
Continue. Please keep one time a year
of this, like, cuddly, warm holiday, just the time leading up to it is wonderful like that. Spending time with your friends, getting a little bit of time off of work, you're in a bit of a, like...
Another thing that working in retail, you don't have time off to work.
Yeah.
This is the time where you are working more than anything.
That's true.
So,
and I pity you for that.
Yeah. I'm glad I'm not
I've never worked retail, so perhaps that's why I've come through this with my attitude about Christmas intact. You're in a bit of a liminal space work-wise where it's not going to be frowned on too hard for you to take a little more time off or be drinking at lunch or indeed be drinking during the day at your Christmas party.
So what you're saying is you spent all day today drinking and reading about serial killers to prepare for the Christmas episode.
Sounds like a great day. I probably could have drank all day if I wanted to. I just no longer believe in drinking.
Or if you had the physical capacity to do so.
Yeah, I don't even have... I have barely enough physical capacity to drink one or two beers, let alone a full day's worth.
Yeah.
That would murder me.
Yeah.
I can tell you, a couple of years ago, I experienced not a white Christmas. And as an Albertan, there was something deeply upsetting about that.
This was in Australia.
I spent my Christmas
The plus minus area of Christmas, like beforehand as well.
Absolutely. That's their summer.
So. I know it's their summer. Yeah. My family lives in New Zealand.
Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah, I'm acutely aware.
I think you've heard of it.
Yeah.
So I spent...
How much before Christmas were you there?
Months and months. I was there for 6 months. So my Christmas was spent barbecuing hot dogs and sitting on the patio watching dogs wrestle over scraps of meat. And it was deeply unnerving. Yeah, it was
upsetting.
That
sounds great to me.
It was great. That's not Christmas.
But are you kidding?
And it's just
it takes
not
away
a big
another
deal
thing
there.
I hate about Christmas is fucking snow.
But it's so funny how that's shaped their Christmas because it's not that big of a deal there. Like, it's not such an event. The whole month of December isn't devoted to Christmas.
Well, it's like Japan as well.
Absolutely.
New Year's Eve is the big thing, right? Not Christmas so much.
Yeah.
And see, this is, again, one of the things that I love about Christmas.
It is,
for better or worse,
Western world centric.
No, for better or worse, we live in Edmonton.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if not for Christmas, This would be
what
a
else
very,
do we have to live
this,
for? Really?
This would be a very dark, ugly time of year.
Yeah.
So to have an excuse to get together with your friends and family, sit around a fire, you know, do kind of just nice friend family shit, you know, think about other people. Like, one of my favorite things about Christmas is getting a chance to, you know, really think about other people, to think about some people that maybe I wouldn't spend that much time thinking about. And I get to spend time while I'm doing my Christmas shopping trying to get into that person's head and trying to, like, really genuinely do the best job I can of getting them a gift that I think does a good job of not only representing, you know, my feelings towards that person and my relationship with them, but also to get them something that they'll really enjoy.
That's a very noble statement. I will say that most people do not think like you.
I find gift giving.
It would be nice if they did.
I don't think that you're a psychic. Based on anecdotal experience,
let's say.
I also don't think you have Professor Xavier like mind reading abilities on a mass scale. So, okay. As much as I think your retail experience has shown you an ugly side of humanity, I think that you should really just speak for yourself, because sure. I think that a lot of people would agree with me that they spend a good amount of time and effort.
They will agree with you out loud. I will give you that.
I find gift giving deeply, like, really stressful.
Me too.
Really, really stressful. Yeah. But I always find it rewarding as well. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. It's really tough to find it something that will suit someone, especially as I'm speaking for myself. But there are less things that I want as I get older. So
it's true.
That
my parents wanted me what I want. Asked me what I wanted and. I have no idea.
I said slow cooker when my parents asked me what I wanted. I'm becoming an adult.
A snuggie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Marcus made fun of me.
Yeah, I just think you should get jammers.
Ooh, nice. I don't like that kind of pajamas.
They have feet and hands.
See, I don't want to.
Do they have the butt flap too? Because that's the dream.
The butt flap kind of distracts me.
Because I want to poop without having to take off my clothing. That's
the one drawback of the onesie. I had a onesie when I was a kid. My mom made us Ninja Turtle onesies.
That's really heartwarming.
They were half pink Ninja Turtle fabric and half white. They were like bisected vertically down the middle.
Okay.
And so one arm and leg on the front was a pink Ninja Turtle pattern. Fabric and
which Ninja Turtle was pink though? Like
no,
it was pictures of them.
It was a pink background,
and then there was
overlaid with pictures of Ninja Turtles and like the Ninja Turtles cartoon logo, all over the place. And one of my memories of having that onesie was it was a real pain if I had to interrupt the playing downstairs with my brothers to run upstairs and take a poop.
It's a completely disrobe.
You literally have to disrobe. You zip down the front and then pull off all of your clothing. And you're essentially sitting on a toilet in socks, in elaborate socks.
It's cold. You're like,
there's something upsetting about that. I want to have at least a layer of clothing when I'm pooping. Something. At least something.
A shirt.
At least.
It feels like you're an animal.
I kind of like it.
Of course you do.
Your base instincts, pooping naked.
Christmas episode.
it's like that South Park Christmas episode with the Christmas poo, Mr. Hanky.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Howdy ho!
It's not bad. It's a passable Mr. Hanky.
Passable Mr. Hanky.
Yeah.
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 So the spoiler show. We're down or up there, depending on how you feel about South Park.
I was
with South Park.
So you guys give me some Christmas memories, some magic, because, you know.
Well, I've got a couple of memories. My fondest, like, childhood Murphy's Law type Christmas memory is going Christmas shopping with my dad. We were buying something for my mom. And I was probably about 11 years old. So I was 11. My younger brother Josh was 9. And my youngest brother Daniel would have been 6 at that point. And Daniel was sick. And my mom and dad had just taken us out to Burger King to have, like, quick dinner so we could go out and do a bunch of Christmas shopping. And going to the mall, my dad's looking through stuff, like, looking through the bay, trying to find stuff to get for my mom. And my little brother keeps coming up to my dad and, like, kind of doing the kid thing, pulling on his pants, going, "Daddy, I don't feel good." And my dad's like, "Oh, it's okay, bud. We're almost done here. I just need to, we'll get you home right away." And, you know, Daniel kind of walks off and then comes back. He's like, "Daddy, I don't feel good." And eventually, I think, probably at about this point, my dad's like, "Oh, bud, it's okay." And he picks up my little brother. And I don't know exactly when after this point it happened, whether it was immediately as he was getting picked up, like the jolt of getting picked up did it, or if he was just sitting there for a while and he was just like not able to handle it anymore. But my little brother pukes all over the side of my dad's face. And so my dad has to try and finish his Christmas shopping with a beard full of puke. And he's holding this very sick little six-year-old. And so Josh and I are, like, kind of walking ahead, like, embarrassed outriders, trying to not look too much like we belong to the dad with the puke on his face.
This is the story you're telling me. It's fun to tell me on Christmas. Is the time your brother puked on your dad's face.
It's a great story.
I guess it's a cute kid story. I don't really know where Christmas comes
from. So we were walking through the bay, and
why didn't he go to the bathroom?
He did. He went to the bathroom and tried to clean himself up, but I think his main priority was at this point just getting all of us out of the bay and into the car and back home. And so he's hustling out of the store. And all I can remember is these ladies who are out Christmas shopping walking, and they see my dad, like, tenderly holding my little brother, who's, like, kind of just, aww, like holding onto his chest and stuff. And these ladies, as they're approaching my dad, are smiling and all happy and stuff. And as they get closer, they start to see the chunks of vomit in his beard and on his shirt. And I just remember watching the looks on their faces change distinctly in that moment, from, like, that kind of, like waxy-eyed, like, "Oh, this is so sweet," to this sort of, like, abject horror at the nightmare that was going on my dad's face. Yeah. It's Christmas,
nice,
man.
It's a nice memory.
Well, I'm certainly heartwarmed. Yeah.
I feel like Christmas is such a wonderful time of year. Perhaps the meaning of that story is that Christmas is such a wonderful time of year that I can look back on that, you know, 15-odd years later, and think that that was just a heartwarming, wonderful time. What a wonderful family bonding moment that was.
It's nice.
You really coalesced as a unit once, you know, the barf was on his face.
Well, actually, ironically, I think my parents divorced about 6 months after that.
That's just the best capper on this wonderful Christmas story I've ever heard.
Whew, Christmas.
Yeah.
Well,
Tori, can you say this?
Yeah, well, I don't know about that, but I like you, Matt, I have a pretty awful memory. But I tend to measure time and base kind of feelings around events and years and things based on kind of movies and various things that I experienced or did. So one of my favorite, or, you know, warmest memories of Christmas is watching Christmas movies or Christmas specials with, you know, my family or with my dad. So we have this kind of pantheon of Christmas movies that are, you know, in the hallowed halls of the best Christmas movies you can possibly watch. And they're some,
like,
of the
Die Hard?
Worst
That's
movies.
All
no, no,
the
it's not
seconds.
Die Hard.
Die
it's
Hard.
Like Jingle All the Way with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Wait. Jingle All the Way?
Yeah.
Do you have It's a Wonderful Life in
No,
there?
No.
So it's not even good Christmas movies.
No, I'm not saying that it's good Christmas movies, but
it's the worst of the Christmas movies. Like, not even the worst as in the least topical.
Yeah.
Literally just the worst.
It's an Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sinbad vehicle. Like, it is potentially one of the worst Christmas
movies.
What
was that guy's name? Turbo Man.
Exactly.
Turbo Man.
And the best line from the movie being, put the cookie down!
I need the latest Turbo Man figure for my son.
Who is that? That's, who's eating a cookie?
That's Phil Hartman. It's actually one of Phil Hartman's last roles. Right? Yeah,
like
last
he's trying to steal his, yeah.
Rest in peace.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, Phil
Hartman. So, you know, those warm memories are forever associated with just some really awful movies. So that and Tim Allen's The Santa Claus and National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. And
classic.
And absolutely. And, you know, some of those Christmas albums that we had lying around the house. So, you know, Jimmy Buffett's Christmas CD or...
What is with your family?
Oh, a very Margaritaville Christmas.
Whatever it happens to be. So, you know, Christmas is that opportunity.
It's an all-inclusive Christmas.
So, you know, Christmas is the opportunity.
Lying on the beach, drinking the margarita.
It's Christmas.
It's nice.
Christmas in Mexico.
So it's the opportunity to revisit all of those, you know, really awful pop culture gems that time has passed by that are remembered by no one but me, really.
It's as though you don't know that there are a whole bunch of great pop culture gems.
I know.
That are almost equally forgotten.
Although
I don't think that the good parts of Christmas pop culture are celebrated as much as you think.
But it's less the actual cult pop cultural artifact and more the warm feelings around those.
The fact that you were so happy.
Exactly.
At that moment, it didn't matter what you were
exactly.
Watching.
I was so watching these movies moment. With my dad.
It
or,
didn't matter
you know?
That you were watching a terrible movie or listening to the worst covers of Christmas songs.
Yeah. But although on that note,
maybe... my ideal Christmas is just very traditional. I guess it's very It's a Wonderful Life and Nat King Cole. So
everyone brings up fucking It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
That movie is depressing as
it
fuck.
It is depressing as fuck. But it's a great Christmas movie.
It's all about should I kill myself or not?
No, it's about life is worth living,
even when you're
in the throes of a horrible bank run in the Depression era.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, name a good Christmas movie that's come out recently.
Bad Santa.
I would argue over that's about
I would
as Christmassy as Reindeer Games.
Yeah.
Bad Santa, even the fucking worst person on earth, vaguely learns a little bit about Christmas.
Debatable again, but it is a great movie.
There's something that's been lost. Like, there were great Christmas movies in the 80s and less so in the 90s, the ones
eight
that I experienced. Eight Crazy Nights.
The clearest memory I have from that particular movie is an image that I'll never be able to get out of my head of a deer's face covered in shit after eating a bunch of shit out of a porta potty.
Yeah, that's a lovely Christmas movie.
Yeah.
Well, isn't it a Hanukkah movie?
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
It's Christmas, true.
Holiday
Hanukkah,
season. Yeah.
What's the difference?
Yeah.
I apologize.
Is it just that we live in a darker, more cynical time that the best Christmas movies we can think of
apparently
are Bad Santa and Eight Crazy Nights?
Apparently I do. I don't know.
No, what are the good Christmas movies out there?
Fucking Die Hard.
Die Hard is a great Christmas movie, but it's like 20 years old.
But he is fighting to save his
25
family.
Years old.
I'm offended because I'm sure there's another Christmas movie that I'm thinking of that's just on the tip of my tongue, and I'm not. It's not coming to me.
The best one that I can think of, and clearly it's a soft one, but Love Actually is a pretty great Christmas movie.
Oh, yeah. That was a good Christmas movie.
But other than that, what's come out in the past 5-10 years that's a
there's
legitimately
tons of
good
movies
Christmas
that come
movie?
Out, but like...
You get, like, what was that, Fred Claus? Like,
Home Alone was great.
Again, 20 years
that's
ago.
That's old, though, yeah.
Yeah.
The 90s was actually not so bad. I mean, you had Home Alone.
Alone 2.
You got...
Home Alone 3.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? The Polar Express, Elf.
Elf is a good one.
Elf
is
a great Christmas movie.
Elf.
Yeah.
They showed the
that's
Polar
the
Express
one I was
at the
looking
theater
for.
Not too long ago.
Yeah, the Tom Hanks Polar Express.
That creepy... rubber skin thing still. I can't deal with that still. I do not like it.
Scrooged.
Scrooge is from the 80s.
Yeah, yeah, I know, but yeah, it's not new. Gremlins. I knew Gremlins was a Christmas movie. I was holding it back because I wasn't sure.
Aaron's always told me, and I believe this is right, Gremlins is a Boxing Day movie.
Because it's all about Aaron it's and all about film studies.
No, no, no. Think it through.
It's basically Christmas.
Think it through. It is a Boxing Day movie because it is all about taking care of your toys. Otherwise, the town gets ruined. Like, it's not so much Christmas, it's...
Man, you just ruined Gremlins for me.
What?
Why'd you have to make it all fucking filmic and shit?
Fucking filmic? I just moved it from one holiday to another.
You no, but you made me think about the theme, you ass. Gremlins isn't supposed to have a theme. It's supposed to be about fucking gremlins and shit.
Yeah.
There's the fuzzy monsters, and then you get them in water.
Mogwais.
Yeah, Mogwai. Yeah.
Mogwai.
And you get them in water... And, or they eat after midnight.
Don't do that.
And
water first, then eat after midnight.
Mm-hmm.
What if they just get water?
Water makes more Mogwai.
Oh, okay.
And those Mogwai are just kind of shitty, but they're not quite gremlins.
There were three things, though. It was eat after midnight, don't get them wet, and...
No, that's the two things.
There were three, weren't there?
Because then they changed his clock.
I thought it was
clock.
Just two.
Yeah, it's just two things.
Okay.
They changed his clock, so it's like, oh, it's only 11 o'clock. I guess I could feed the gremlins. Those
sneaky gremlins.
The Mogwai, and then...
Wait, the Mogwai changed the clock or the gremlins?
The bad Mogwai.
Oh
yeah,
yeah. Naughty,
and then they turn
naughty.
Into they turn into gremlins because they wanted to evolve into gremlins.
Is that part of their life cycle? Like, do you think that was a compulsion that the water exposed Mogwai?
You want to talk about someone overthinking gremlins?
Is that the ultimate goal of Mogwai? Is to turn into gremlins?
That's what I'm saying.
Is that self actualization for
Gizmo
for Mogwai?
Trapped in perpetual like pre puberty by. Becoming a gremlin?
Absolutely.
It certainly does look and sound
but
like
yeah,
a total...
You're getting mad at me and because I thought about what day gremlins should take place on. And you're thinking, let's dig into the gremlin's life cycle.
I think thinking about the science of movies is totally fine.
Yeah.
It's when they get ruined by film studies, people
I'm
try
sorry.
To talk about themes.
I'm sorry, let's think again about our episode about Prometheus, which is entirely based on science that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And you were willing to defend that one.
Yeah, it's still a great movie. I actually saw it on one of the worst of 2012 lists, and I was offended.
Yeah. It is. No, it's not.
The first, like, half to three quarters is excellent.
It was very pretty. As soon as you thought about it for more than 5 seconds, it
well,
felt...
what are you
it
doing
took way more than
about
five
it.
Seconds. And I got to tell you, to a certain extent, I don't even care.
I know you don't care.
We had a whole podcast on it. I guess I don't need to repeat my position.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, fine. Gremlins is a Boxing Day movie.
Yeah.
But still, it's Christmas season.
It's Christmas-esque.
It's Christmas-esque.
Yeah.
I want there to be some sort of Christmas element to a Wes Anderson movie, but there just isn't.
It's a natural pairing, though. I see why you would think.
It's sort of aesthetic with like,
yeah.
A Wes Anderson Christmas movie would be great. Maybe that's what Wes Anderson needs to give us, is a Christmas movie.
I think he could do it.
He would do a great Christmas movie.
So do we think Elf is the last great Christmas movie?
I think so.
That embodies the true spirit of Christmas?
Well, the true spirit of Christmas in a form that is palatable. I mean, again, like... Tons of other movies approach that, but they're not really doing it in a way that is worthwhile or make you think for more than 5 seconds. Like,
well,
it's just through your head and gone.
Even saying the phrase, the true spirit of Christmas,
that's true.
Is quite fraught.
Absolutely.
Like which, you mean like the recent commercialism
Absolutely.
Element of Christmas? Or
what?
Are we talking about like a 2,000-year-old birthday party type thing? Or are we talking about... Like a Norse, like a Norse winter solstice ritual.
Absolutely, I think it really embodies a Norse solstice ritual.
Yeah,
in which case we should all be eating mushrooms instead of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It does. It's the current understanding of what Christmas is about in terms of spending time with your family and the people you care about.
Plus, it's drenched in irony, which
Absolutely.
Is the only way that anyone can approach...
It's drenched in irony because Zooey
yeah.
Deschanel is in it.
Well, it's the only way anyone can approach a feeling these days.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to cloak it in, you know... we know that it's not like this. Everyone doesn't believe it, but here you go.
You live in a cold, cynical world, don't you, Matt Bose?
Yeah, apparently. Matt Bose is just breaking my heart.
He doesn't understand the true meaning of Christmas.
I don't understand the true meaning of Christmas. I'm still working from the cold, bitter Norse, you know, solstice ritual, which it's going to be great. Drink some meat and then you just fucking go.
That sounds pretty good. You eat massive amounts of Amanita muscaria mushrooms and trip balls and then pee and have reindeer chase after you.
And then attack a village.
Oh yeah, maybe toss a rape and pillage in there for good measure.
Yeah,
but you know it's up to you.
I don't know. You can't just do a Christmas movie anymore. Elf is the closest thing.
Yeah.
No, you know what? I think that whole ironic detachment.
Yeah.
The whole ironic detachment thing that has been really pervasive
since the 90s.
In the aughts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Since the 90s. I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that has to ebb and flow. You can't be always, you know, ironically detached. And I think there's actually probably going to be a big push in the future, in the very near future, for just like simple, straightforward earnestness and authenticity.
Ernest had a Christmas movie.
That's true.
It's a hell of a segue. Wow.
Ernest. Man, we've been all over segues today.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And I think, you know, it's really been embodied by, you know, the hipster generation or this connection to or requirement for irony. It's the sugar to make the, or I guess it's the opposite. It's the medicine to make the sugar go down, right?
Yeah, like, it is.
Yeah.
It's the medicine to make the sugar not seem like such a pussy move.
Yeah, exactly. So I think you're right. And I think it's getting to the point where we're going to see things swing back the other way, you know, soon enough. But
yeah, well, I mean, I think part of the reason for that is that underneath that kind of jaded exterior, I think there's, I think the kind of hipster generation or, you know, whatever mm-hmm. you want to call them, mm-hmm. Generation Y has, you know, because of that ironic detachment, perhaps been able to like more earnestly examine their feelings.
Absolutely.
You know, like when you're pretending to not really care, you can like, it's pretty easy, I think, to actually explore the feelings that you're having and like really embrace the fact that, you know, you love your friends or you love your mm-hmm. family or, you know, you don't really care that much about getting to spend time together.
I think it often accompanies some sort of political or social event that really shakes people to their core in terms of returning to your, you know, basic values or returning to that earnestness. So I think, you know, once if you know, something like that, some, you know, this kind of recent economic decline didn't necessarily kickstart it, but if something like that were to happen, you know, we might see that return even faster.
Mm-hmm.
To something that's, you know, pure, whatever that means. I think you're seeing it more and more in, you know, the evolution from Gen Xers to Gen Yers to, you know, whatever this new generation, the millennials, as some people are calling them, kind of rebelling against the rebellion that previous generations
had. Can I just say,
so.
I hate the term Gen Y.
Oh, I know.
I mean, if you want to talk about a generation that doesn't have an identity, just say it's the one after the last one. Just like, Gen X, that was a thing. We're just the next one. You know, don't give a fuck about us.
Gen X 2.
Yeah, just saying it out there. Fuck Gen Y.
Yeah. Well,
it's the worst.
Well, yeah, I guess there wasn't a Generation W.
No, there wasn't. Yeah. Gen X, and then like, oh, yeah, that was a pretty good branding scheme. Let's just call this one Gen Y.
Oh, you know, it's like naming hurricanes and then all of a sudden just stopping and calling them Sheila 1 through 5.
Yeah.
What was worse than Gen Y was when people were trying to name what's been, I guess, kind of referred to as millennials now. And yeah, like Generation Y Not. Oh, there was some bad stuff. But I think millennial has been settled on.
I think millennials doable. That's exactly. I've heard the second lost generation as well.
Oh, God.
No.
And also, I think Adbusters called it the last generation.
Oh, that's pathetic.
Because of the inherent depression of hipster culture is just nothing. It's just garbage. That was their opinion.
I guess part of what I'm thinking is that,
especially
because because of the, like, hipsters aren't even cool
anymore. Exactly.
People say, like, it's not that people are envious of hipsters anymore.
No, they're tolerable.
As soon as they were given a name,
yeah,
and people were given a term with which to kind of categorize them and clump them together, they started to immediately look down on them.
That was
as people learned the word hipster, it became
pejorative.
A derisive, pejorative type term.
Yeah.
And so as the word hipster has kind of entered the common usage
again
all around the world, yeah, again,
mm-hmm.
this time in reference to a particular type of millennial, I think there has been a backlash against some of the so-called hipster values, because mm-hmm. what, like, it can't just be a backlash against dressing a certain way.
No.
It can't just be a backlash against liking a particular type of music or being, particularly versed in pop culture or fashionable or, you know, liking music, whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it has to be rooted in a stereotypical personality.
I think it's ironic detachment is what it is.
And
it's,
I think that's what people are rebelling against.
Absolutely.
The thrust of the article was that, you know, as opposed to the mass social movements that preceded it, like new wave, punk, grunge, everything like that, no one wants to identify as hipster. It's a movement that is completely exclusive of its own members.
The hipster movement also wasn't named.
It's also not a movement.
The group hipsters were not self-coined.
Exactly.
Right? No.
So it's completely top-down enforced, and no one wants to be one. So this is, like, if this is a youth movement, you know, what's next? I mean, this is one that no one at all wants to be a part of.
Like, punks wanted to be punks.
Yeah.
They self-identified as punks.
Yeah.
A hipster would never tell you they were a hipster.
Because that breaks the illusion of being a hipster.
Exactly.
Yeah. It also probably means you don't understand what being a hipster is.
Yeah.
That's like the first rule of Fight Club.
Well, and as soon as it was commodified in such an obvious way by your places like, you know, American Apparel or Urban Outfitters, which I don't know if you guys saw this, but they've started selling clothes that have been found at flea markets, and there is a tag that says this item was hand selected for you by the Urban Outfitters team.
Hold on, was it curated?
It might have been curated,
nice.
Which is like, it's like at a certain point you're making fun of yourself. Which is exactly what's happened to the hipster movement. Is anything that's trying to cater to hipsters immediately disqualifies itself from something that, you know, whether or not a self-identified or not.
Yeah. And this is how Ed Busters is calling generation that's eating itself. It's, you don't want to be a part of it. Every time something shows up, it is immediately excluded. There's just no way out.
And even talking about it, like, you have to couch your language so much where it's a group of individuals that are a group by exclusivity, almost.
Exclusivity that is
but
enforced
not,
by a culture of shame?
Exclusivity is a part of, I guess, every movement or youth movement,
but this is one that's not
enforced by those in the group, it's enforced by those outside of the group.
And
this is reminding me of it. I'm trying to find an article that I read yesterday. I can't remember, it was some blog, something about a psychiatrist. Anyways, this guy or girl takes a bunch of pop culture, like various pop culture things, and like dissects them with a fine tooth comb in terms of, actually it was about hipsters. It was the article that got me to this particular other article was about hipsters talking about hipsters on food stamps. Where there's this thing where I think it was an article for Salon.com where these two college-educated but unemployed hipsters used food stamps to go buy themselves, like, a gourmet meal from Whole Foods. And this guy just this person just thrashes these hipsters. And in another article on his website, or her website.
This website.
This website. Another article on this website was about, basically, it took this this watch ad and dissected it to explain how this watch ad is targeted towards not rich people, but the aspirational 14%.
That's half of all ads, really.
Yeah, but this one in particular was interesting because the ways that it was targeted were pretty subtle. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no catchphrase. Like, it's not like, you know, it's not like it's just a one-word thing or something. It's a complicated catchphrase. It, you know, says something about, you know, it's like it's too complicated to be like a really easy rolling off the tongue sort of slogan. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem slogan-y. And it talks about, you know, holding on to things forever. But it's also a company that's only been around for 10 years. And so...
Do you remember what company it was?
The actual 1%. It was a watch company. I can't remember the the initials are PP. So
it's not perhaps, Patek Philippe, is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Because Patek Philippe's really old.
Oh, okay. Well, the article was saying that they haven't been around in the watch markets for much longer than since I think 1996 or something like that.
Oh yeah, I don't know then. Yeah.
And so, you know, it has this kind of aura of being an old-fashioned sort of watch, but the actual 1% would know that it's not.
Yeah.
And they don't really read magazines anyways or care what magazines say.
They have servants to do that for them.
Yeah, they go and buy the watch with the watch face that's as close in size to their actual face as they can.
Yeah.
And encrusted with the most diamonds. So there are all these little subtle ways that this like aspirational... 14% gets targeted, and it just kind of makes me think about the way that now you have places like Urban Outfitters
mm-hmm.
that just have down
yeah.
exactly how to target
mm-hmm.
hipsters and perhaps the aspirational 14% who want to be hipsters.
If I had to like pick a certain like marketing technique to try and attract that crowd, which in itself does not want to be marketed to. Mm-hmm. The illusion of history, the illusion of authenticity is mm-hmm. what definitely, like, that's a hole in one right there. You make a logo that looks like it's from the 19th century or something, or a name that is vaguely reflective of that.
Yeah, or you make...
That's the marketing technique.
Or you make something that is simple and...
Artisanal.
Apparently artisanal, or apparently built to last, or apparently a design that's been unchanged for...
Yeah.
Like decades.
Yeah.
I mean, I love this place and I'm, you know, I'm a hypocrite for calling it out right now, but Best Made, I don't know if
either of
you guys are familiar.
I'm not cool
with this.
Enough to know what that is.
Best Made Co. I think it's bestmadeco.com. They have this whole online internet store, but it's basically like Hipster Mountain Equipment Co-op.
Mm. Like a hipster general store?
Yeah. So. It's not quite a general store. It's very focused on the outdoors.
Like hipster L.L. Bean?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like hipster L.L. Bean.
Okay.
So you can buy yourself like some crazy, like a crazy starched jacket or something like that. Or like mm-hmm. waxed. It's a waxed jacket that's so like...
Rigid
that it stands on its own. You can buy that for like $400 or something.
Hmm.
You know, the things on it are very expensive, but apparently they will last forever. The things that I've gotten from them have all been good. They all have still lasted me, but
yeah,
who knows?
I think you had a really good point, I guess, both of you, where authenticity and perceived history or whether or not either are
the illusion
legitimate. Absolutely. The illusion of either of them are really connected to that I guess hipster movement in reaction to, you know, whatever is going on in society.
I think it's just reflection of postmodernity.
Yeah.
Like it's just here is your movement, here are the things associated with the movement. feel free to consume this at your leisure.
Like, but it's
prepackaged for your enjoyment.
Absolutely. It's prepackaged, but it's done the way that it was done in your parents'
exactly.
day, or your grandparents'
That's the
grandparents'
way. Yeah. Yeah. That's the way they
no
slip it in.
No one wants to have it like their parents.
That's true.
But that's the way they slip it in. It's just sort of like, yeah, here is authenticity that you can buy brand new. Enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Also, seriously, it has never been more expensive to look as poor as mm-hmm. as it is. You know,
like, again, postmodernity in action.
The
amount of
money that is spent to look so cheap and disgusting sometimes is ridiculous. Like, perfectly exemplified by the American Apparel billboards and ads.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there, I have never seen just greasier, unkempt people than I have ever seen in those American Apparel
ads. Just out of
ads.
The Terry Richardson playbook.
Oh,
just,
yeah.
Yeah. Just and then you're supposed to just understand that this is being done for this purpose.
Oh, it's ironic, though. Yeah. Yeah.
It's just, too many levels of just sort of irony and contempt for the audience. It makes walking around just and looking at it just kind of offensive.
And yet, in the end,
boner inducing.
I feel like way to ruin this. What I'm saying is, what I'm doing is bringing it all back to Christmas.
Bring it back.
In the end, it is the very dispassionate, disenchanted, disenfranchised.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, they're actually enfranchised, but they
as enfranchised
wannabe,
as any generation
wannabe,
has ever been.
They're wannabe disenfranchised.
Disenfranchised
hipsters.
Yeah.
These hipsters are going to be the people, I think, who end up bringing the authenticity back, like the genuine, non-ironic, honest authenticity back. Because I think this whole kind of detached ironic phase is, it's like the training wheels. It's the training wheels of learning how to emote like a non-sarcastic Chandler Bing douchebag.
Yeah.
It's the middle stage of evolution to potentially what you know, the next form of, or next, you know, overall theme of this coming generation is going to be, whether it's, you know, hopefully or not hopefully, that's a value judgment, but, you know, that authentic returning to good old fashioned values, earnestness that, you know, kind of characterizes those good old fashioned Christmas movies, like It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
And Jingle All the Way.
Nicely done.
It's true.
Yeah.
I don't feel like selling me on it this episode.
Have you?
I feel like,
do you feel like you've been sold on Christmas?
I don't even know.
Or are you a piece of shit?
That was a quite a wide conversation there. We took some tangents.
As per usual,
Spoiler show tangents.
Sporadically deep. I'd just like to mention that Matt and Aaron's Tiki mug collection has expanded, and now they have the most disgusting caricature
of
a woman.
That's the bearded clam. That's the name of the drink.
I was going to say, because that woman has just a horrifically long bush.
Yeah.
And also her breasts.
Pneumatic, if you would pick a verb. Mm-hmm. No, adjective.
She doesn't even look like she... Like, to me, I'm reading that image as that's a mug about a tiki boy who elected to become a tiki girl and had enormous, just fake, not even remotely normal looking breasts that point out in like opposite directions at a 45 degree angle from each other. And you know,
I'll agree with this assessment.
Quite the merkin.
Yeah. But,
and it's the most mangy merkin. The mangiest merkin.
Yeah. I like the green guy. The lava lech.
Absolutely.
The green one. He's pretty freaky.
The lava lech I like. Yeah. I agree. Matt, you guys would really love seeing all these mugs. If only you could.
Yeah.
If only this wasn't a podcast and we weren't alienating you by the second.
But, well, if they're stuck with us this long, they are true blue.
How many episodes is this?
29, I think.
That's an achievement.
And listeners, this will be our last episode of 2012.
Absolutely. Yeah.
We will not be back until 2013.
We will see you on the other side.
Yeah. I mean, so far, so good. It's the 19th today.
Yeah.
It's going to be after the 21st by the time they hear it, won't it?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like the world's going to end.
No, it looks like it's
things
fine.
Are looking good. I mean, I feel like if it was going to end, you know, on that sort of immediate scale, it would have to have been ramping up by now.
There'd be some precursors.
Someone would have mentioned something.
Yeah.
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 There would have been something in the news other than the derisive mocking of the end of the world soothsayers.
Yeah. We'd see at least locusts or something.
Yeah. Or like frogs. Maybe the
pale horse.
Yeah.
His name was Death.
The sun wouldn't rise and the moon wouldn't set.
Well, on that happy note, hold your loved ones tight and, you know, just and be with them. Don't ironically be detached from your people around you.
Yeah.
If you like someone, just say that you like them.
That can be the summary on it.
Yeah. Open up.
Yeah.
Try and be a legitimate human being. Don't just do something because you were told to.
Sometimes
don't even listen to me now.
Sometimes when you have love in your heart for someone, you just need to let them know.
Yeah.
You need to let it out.
Just don't have to do it on Christmas. That's a great day to do it.
You can do it anytime.
Yeah.
Christmas is a great excuse, though, and it's a good day to start.
Just high-five someone that you think is cool.
Yeah.
That's good.
Give an especially warm handshake to a colleague who you admire.
Well done, sir.
Well done, sir.
Right here.
Well
right
done, there. Sirs. Yeah.
Well done.
Wonderful year.
That was us handshaking.
Did you hear the warmth in them?
Yeah.
Is it crackling your speakers like a fireside?
Yeah.
Like a cozy fireside chat?
While Marcus is engaged in reverie, how do we find Tory Dance, the Azrael of Morrissey facts and the Batman of Christmas facts?
The Santa Claus of Batman facts.
And the Empress of India.
You can find me on Twitter at Torrance Olivier is where you can find me. And again, I tweet haphazardly and semi-regularly, but you know, I'm hitting the 30s in terms of followers, so that's an achievement.
That's a big 3-0.
Maybe late or the high 20s. So
big 3-0. Yeah,
I'm going to credit it to the spoiler show.
Do you have a little star next to your name too?
No. How do you get one of those?
You have to be famous.
It's a check mark, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, what is it? You have to take the picture of yourself with the thing.
They used to do that. I don't know if they still have to verify that way.
I'm not sure how it works.
Verified,
but
yeah.
You got to get that. Then they'll start coming.
It seemed really difficult to get verified sometimes.
It did. There are definitely some people who were legitimate accounts of famous people, and they were not verified, and I think they seemed happy with that.
Where do we find this particular famous person sitting here?
Oh, this guy right here?
Yeah.
The guy in these pants?
It's
Marcus Cunningham, and you can find me at Marcus Deca on Twitter and also Instagram.
For the time being is...
You know what? Yeah, I'm getting mocked now because I was unhappy with Instagram's changes to its terms of service.
Pretty vocally unhappy, too.
What do you mean? I just posted one thing. That's nothing compared to election time.
Oh, yeah. No. Election time is... This is a dark time.
It's a dark time.
Yeah.
I just posted one thing because it looked like Instagram was possibly changing its terms of service to allow
it. But it seems like people just realized that the terms of service weren't great to begin with. So it doesn't seem like things are getting much worse.
No, Instagram has changed it.
I thought they changed it back.
They caved in?
They backed out.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Yeah.
Hey, it's a Merry Christmas.
It's a Christmas
after all.
Miracle. Yeah. Well,
and frankly, if people had been more cynical about it in the first place and not
like
spoken out like I did.
Like I was incredibly cynical about it?
Yeah. You're welcome. Your shitty photos
they can have my
could
30
possibly
photos
have been used
a couple
for
sandwiches
some
I ate in like a beer.
Purposes.
They can have that.
Yeah. I'd like to think some of my photos are pretty decent. Not that I think that they would ever be co-opted by some company, but... I like having ownership of them.
Okay.
They're shitty, but they're mine.
Perhaps you could go to Urban Outfitters and buy a Polaroid camera or a Leica.
A curated Polaroid camera.
Then those would only be your photos.
I get a Hasselblad, thank you very much.
Yeah. Anyway.
You probably, it's It's kind of an indie camera. You probably haven't heard of it.
Anyway, you can find me at Matt Bose or at my website.
Matt_Bose, he
Matt means. Underscore Bose, yeah.
I have
my website, thisnerdinglife.com.
I have one final joke for you, or one final word.
Sure.
How many hipsters does it take to screw in a light bulb?
How many?
It's this, like, really obscure number. You've probably never heard of it.
Oh, hello.
I won't tell you.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right, ladies and gentlemen.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
We'll see you on the other side.
Drink bundles and bundles of Christmas cheer and hug your family members close.
And say hi to your mother for me.
It'll be the most wonderful Christmas time in all of Canada town.
And if you've been using Wikipedia for research, clear your search history so your coworkers don't think you're serial killers.
Yeah.
Oh, good idea.
Yeah.
You do that when you get to work tomorrow.
See you guys.
Incognito mode.
Yeah. See you guys next year.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.
I'm Commander Shepard, and the Spoiler Show is my favorite podcast on the Citadel.